Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Rodney Shakespeare. Rodney teaches at Trisac. I can never pronounce that right. Trisakti University. I have to say it slowly.
So do I.
It's a bit of a tongue twister. It's a little easier saying UCLA, USC, or things like that. Anyway, Trisakti University in Britain, in London. Rodney teaches a postgraduate Islamic economics and finance, and he comments often on major world issues, and certainly there are many of them going on that are not very pleasant, causing misery for millions of people, especially in the Middle East right now. But this stuff goes on in so many places. Rodney, I welcome you to the program. I am focused like a laser on what's going on in the Middle East, and mostly Syria, Iran, Israel, Palestine, but also right here in my own country. And, of course, whatever happens here, there's a longstanding partnership with Britain, two of the links in my access of evil.
Yes. Well, I thought, Stephen, that we might start with Saudi Arabia. Then a little word on Turkey, which is shooting itself in the foot. Skip across to Syria, and then whether we'll ever get to Europe and the United States, I don't know.
Oh, I like what you're bringing up, because one of the things on my mind was to ask you, what are your thoughts, or what might you know, if anything, about Prince Bandar?
Yes. Well, the point about Prince Bandar is that there is a word that he has been assassinated, essentially in revenge for the assassinations of the Syrian generals. And in the interwoven way the Middle East works, you sort of have wheels within wheels and groupings within groupings. And it's not beyond possibility that Prince Alexander Bandar has been assassinated by Syrian intelligence inside Saudi Arabia. You see, it's not just a question of a network. It's about Saudi Arabia, which is essentially beginning to collapse. For years, everyone has viewed it as being sort of a monolith, which is so solid that no one could ever move it, and a monolith supported by the USA. But the reality now is that it's a country ruled by vicious, dribbling autocrats, by corrupt kleptomaniacs, by plunderers and ghouls. And it's not the personal fiefdom of the Saudi family. It's the land of the Arabs, though it happens to be ruled by these feudal frauds and these bumptious hypocrites. And if you look at the monarchical structure and the 10,000 associated people in that, they're then all fighting amongst themselves. Prince Bandar was allegedly guilty of trying to organize a coup about 3 years ago, and he disappeared for a while, and then he suddenly reappeared, and then he may have been assassinated. And it's highly significant, Stephen, that they don't seem to dare to make an announcement about this. This is because, you see, in a very fundamental way, they are now starting to fight amongst themselves. Beneath those vicious, dribbling autocrats are, of course, the slavering young Saudi hyenas, who are just as vicious as their elders, just as corrupt and just as perverse. But the hyenas have one difference. Whilst they and the gruntocrats and the hyenas are united in oppressing the people, the young hyenas also want to rip out the throats of the elder gruntocrats. So it is a situation which is beginning at the top. It's beginning to look unstable. The mystery of Prince Bandar is one aspect of that. And then in the country as a whole, you've got 60% of the population beneath the poverty line. You have the deliberate treating as non-humans, that's an important point, of the Eastern peoples. The Shia peoples are treated as non-human and non-Muslim. And in the west, you have the kingdom of Hijaz, which is just only ruled by a conquest. And in the southwest, you have lands which really belong to Yemen. And looking at it as a whole, you can see that Saudi Arabia is really an unstable society. And on top of that, Stephen, they're probably trying now to get an atom bomb. And who's behind all this, of course, who backs them to the end, is the Britain and the United Kingdom. There seems to be clear evidence that they're now going for an atom bomb. It's payback time, you see, because the Saudis paid for Pakistan to get the bomb originally. And now they're saying, well, we want the bomb, we're going to have the bomb, and Pakistan is going to give it to us. So there you are. An unstable regime, a situation in which more and more people realize that change is coming. And there are huge demonstrations are taking place. A young lad was shot yesterday, and they use the usual things, not just tear gas. Never think that, Stephen. It's poison gas and vicious tortures inside their prisons. But the world is starting to say change could be coming to Saudi Arabia. And I would say one more thing, Stephen. The women of Saudi Arabia are going to be the great force which stirs this revolution. They, of course, get beaten up, controlled by the men. The men are a bunch of cowards, at least the ones in the ruling regime are. And the sign, though, the agents of those cowards, of course, what do they call it? The mutaween, the religious police. And if a woman even looks at them, or stands in a slight stance, arms akimbo, they then whip her. And this, of course, is the psychology and practice of people who are cowards and bullies and don't know how to get on with other human beings. The whole thing is rotten at its core. And people are sensing that. And that is why the demonstrations are increasing. And outside in the alternative media, I and others are putting the word out that the regime is starting to crumble, and the great force which will do it from within more than anything else is probably going to be the women. I'll stop there, Stephen.
Well, I agree with everything that you said, Rodney. Saudi Arabia is really, not to say what is the most vile regime on the planet. I nominate my own country, Rodney, because of all the harm it does to so many millions of people globally, including at home. But certainly Saudi Arabia is just a wretched regime run by, are these hyenas, I guess you mean, of the young Saudi princes.
That's right. I mean, yes, they're the young ones, the hyenas.
I mean, who ever heard of a country, who ever heard of a royal family, or call them whatever you want to, claiming a country is their own personal property? The first thing that pops into my mind is 19th century King Leopold about the Congo having the, well, and that's a massive, massive country in size, claiming it as his personal fiefdom. Well, the Saudis do the same thing on a smaller scale, the Bahrainis and Bahrain, the Qataris. I mean, these vicious Middle East monarchies, despots, all of them despots. And the disgusting irony, Rodney, that Saudi Arabia was the drafter of the General Assembly resolution that was passed with 133 countries voting for it. Qatar was also partnered with them. Bahrain a little bit partnered with them on this. I mean, these three countries, three nominees for possibly the three worst regimes in the region, Israel aside, it's in a class by itself, already nuclear armed, as we know, Rodney, chemical weapons, biological weapons, all the persecution it does, including against its own Jewish population, another topic I've written about. But those three countries, they draft this resolution and they point fingers the wrong way and they blame Assad for the Western-sponsored death squads, the Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and I don't know, maybe Bahrain's involved in that as well, funding and arming and paying salaries of these cutthroat killers that are going around murdering Syrian citizens, and Assad gets blamed for it, and the UN General Assembly acting more like an imperial agent than a legitimate body, which it is not, especially after Friday.
Stephen, I'd like to sort of make a comment going round all of that as to what I think may be happening. And it is that the one to look at is in fact Turkey. Turkey, a country which is basically split between Islamists and secular forces, a country which is certainly split between Turks and Kurds, and a country which had a policy of being friends to all its neighbours, has suddenly turned round and is playing a most vicious sectarian card. And in doing so, in alliance with Saudi Arabia, where of course they're all vicious and sectarian there, and Qatar, another lot there, in doing so, they are opening up the what will be the blowback of sectarian forces and the divisive forces right the way throughout the Middle East, including Turkey itself. And what I think is really happening is that they have been maneuvered to serve the purposes of a Zionist policy, which is quite simple. It wants every single country in the Middle East split up into as small as pieces as possible, so that there is not one single piece anywhere which could ever stand up to Israel. And that is what is really going on. Is Turkey has been maneuvered, it's shot itself in the foot, the blowback is going to come already. Syria has made an interesting move. There's a tiny bit of Syria which is actually full of Kurds. And in the last 2 or 3 days, Assad has given self-control over that region to the Kurds. And in doing so, of course, he is setting forth the forces which will move towards splitting the Kurdish part out of Turkey, and also in Iraq as well. So all of this serves ultimately a Zionist purpose. And if you want to understand it, just say, well, the American foreign policy controlled by the Zionists is basically trying to smash everything up into pieces in the Middle East. But in doing so, people like Turkey will suffer in due course, and so most certainly is Saudi Arabia going to split up in due course. So the whole of the Middle East is going into a melting pot, not allegedly, in the name of serving a Zionist entity, but in reality, of course, these things are going to come out differently. I mean, this eventually, could be quite quickly, Saudi state will be smashed. If there's any sort of attack in the Middle East, you can be assured that, I'm sad to say this, American forces in Bahrain will be wiped out, Stephen. And that's the only thing which, in fact, keeps the Bahraini, the killer caliphs afloat in Bahrain. The British, of course, support them, but it's essentially the American base that does it. So the whole of the Middle East is being put into flux. It could easily go into a regional war. And since the Russians have now had enough, and even the Chinese have had enough, but we'll stay with the Russians, it might even turn nuclear, because, you see, it goes like this. Once you set the thing in flux in any way, there is going to be a counterattack on Israel. And all this Iron Dome will not, in fact, prevent a considerable destruction of the present area of Israel. And when that happens, Israel, whose psychology is, if I may say so, rather like that of the Americans, which is then an innate, they should be able to attack anybody, and it's all wrong if that person attacks back. Well, you can be certain this, that if they go into war with Iran, Iran and other states will massively attack Israel. And Israel, ever the paranoid attack dog, always feeling it has a right to attack anybody, particularly if they're defenseless, Israel may well use an atomic bomb.
Now, well, they have said they will. They have said they will use it.
Are.
Oh,
well, there you
are. A wonderful man who, if he was still living, I would so much love to have him on this program, Israel Shahak. an Israeli who died some years ago. He wrote a number of books. I believe he was a chemist by profession, but he became activist. He became a geopolitical critic of Israel, and I guess he became renowned enough so that Israel didn't go after him and silence him. But he made it very clear in one of his books, and I quoted from it a couple of times, that Israel absolutely will use nuclear weapons if it feels possibly its existence is threatened. You made a very important comment, Rodney, about Israel.
I mean, it is the situation is moving towards that. And this is the United States, of course, has so stupidly seems to think that its long-term interests are in fact in favor of an Israel which does not allow an independent Palestine. Stephen, an independent Palestine may not now be possible because the United States and the UK and France and the rest of them have allowed the Zionists to put settlements in the occupied lands. And so you are if there's going to be a long-term solution, it's going to have to be a state in which the Israelis, the Jews, will be in a minority. The whole situation there is totally unstable. But then that's American policy and that's British policy. I mean, we have allowed it to go on, we've allowed the settlements to go on, and so that there can no longer be an independent Palestine. So that one is coming home to roost as well. But as we get towards that, the risk is, of course, is that Israel will do something stupid. There will be a counterattack, and it will then counterattack with an atomic bomb. Yes, so there we are.
Oh, so much you said. I could spend the rest of the program commenting on it, Rodney. Two things off the top of my head. I agree that things have crossed the Rubicon, and there's no such a thing as a viable independent Palestinian state. I mean, you've got about 500,000 settlers in the West Bank. You've got something like 60% of the territory already taken. I mean, you can't tell 500,000 people, sorry guys, you have to leave and go back to Israel. You can't do that. To me, the solution is one state for everybody who lives in it. Who ever heard of such an old-fashioned idea? I mean, that's the way countries are composed. You don't split it up by this religion or this ethnic group or this anything else. You've got a country for the people who live in it. All citizens should be declared equal. I wanted to comment briefly on the important thing you said about Israel wanting to break up the nations in the region. I wrote about this in detail in Israeli, and it was so long ago, several years ago, I can't recall his name. I could look it up, but I won't do it on air, who set out a strategy for Israel, that Israeli strategy going forward, if it wanted to survive, I think he said, has to divide and conquer the region, break them up by their ethnicities, one country after another he went through, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iraq.
Saudi Arabia. Did I hear you say Saudi Arabia?
Oh, I believe so.
I think I did, yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, break them all up. And, of course, the word Balkanizing didn't exist then. I don't think it existed. Well, I mean, Balkanizing refers to the Balkans, but it really applies generically now. So the first Balkanizing that went on was Yugoslavia into, what, half a dozen countries? I mean, one country that was fairly stable, busted up into six, and now it's just an absolute mess, which is what happens when America gets its grubby, bloody hands on something. And what they're doing to the Middle East, I fear a general war also, Rodney. I think this may go so far. I mean, you've got Syria that has a powerful military. I don't think they have nuclear weapons, but they certainly have powerful weapons, and they have powerful friends. The Iranians have a powerful military. Hezbollah has loads of missiles, and they're more accurate, and they have further reach than they did in 2006 when Israel launched its war of aggression in Lebanon. I mean, you get into a fight with Syria and with Iran, and you might find thousands of Hezbollah missiles raining down on Israel. Israel's never had to go through that before. You know, the 1948 war when they didn't have these kinds of weapons. But if Israel gets into this kind of fight, and I have to believe, Rodney, that there are high officials in the government and in Israel's military who think it's absolutely insane to get into a war with either of these two countries.
Well, there are estimates of the number of missiles which will fall on Israel, and which would get through the Iron Dome system. And one figure I've heard is 150,000.
Goodness. I think the Iron Dome, which is their missile defense, I think it's a crock. You know, they might knock some down, but
and
you know, it's like
I can tell you, Stephen, a fair percentage of those 150,000 missiles will be concentrated on one spot only, and that will be on Dimona. And you see? Yes.
Of course, there's only one problem with doing that. Lebanon is not very far from the Israeli border, so you have to think. But I think Iran absolutely would target Dimona. And Dimona is not the only nuclear site. There's a whole bunch of them.
There's a whole bunch of them. But the fact of the matter is that, the Middle East, like any other country now, I mean, you know, we all know about what's happened in Japan and what's going on around the world. Now, you have these wars just for the sake of supporting an entirely aggressive, paranoid attack dog, which is Israel. If they have this war, others will strike back. They don't seem to understand is that if they attack, others will say, we are attacked, we will counterattack. And Dimona and the other targets in Israel are absolutely certain to be attacked. Whatever the rights or wrongs are, they are going to be attacked. I mean, when you attack them, you attack, for example, Iran. If you attack its civilian atomic sites. And Stephen, how is it that we have people like that psychopathic Nazi Susan Rice and that harridan Hillary Clinton, who all the time go on about Iran and never ever mention that all 16 American intelligence agencies say that Iran is not creating a bomb. MI6 says that, and even Mossad says that. But no, they must play the being election time, they must play the Zionist line. And of course, you've got Israelis ruled by Netanyahu, who's a complete madman. And he is so arrogant. You can see in his body language the way he walks. They will go for an attack because they know that they can drag in the United States. Immediately Israel attacks, the USA is involved. And immediately after that, there's going to be Iran will have to attack itself. I mean, it's surrounded by American bases. You look at the map, and Iran is surrounded by base after base after base. Though I can tell you something else, though, is that any base within 200 miles of Iran, which is American, any ship, and I suspect even submarines, will all be destroyed by the Iranians. Because, you see, they've actually focused all their development on doing that. They've just said, we will take control of the area around about where we are, and we don't have any long-term aggression plans, except we will try and do our best against anybody who attacks us. And that means Israel, and it means, the Iranians have said this, it means anybody who helps Israel. And that includes, of course, Saudi Arabia, which WikiLeaks revealed that it wants to attack Iran. And it includes America. So there's the scene. Anyway, Steve, can I ask you about Syria? Because you've mentioned Syria. You're doing some excellent articles on Syria. How do you see it developing? I mean, you know, what on earth is going to happen next?
I'm very scared. I've said for months that I see this thing heading for war. America has planned regime change in Syria for over a decade. It may go back to the 1990s, but it at least goes back to around the 9/11 era. And General Wesley Clark, this is out in the open. I've mentioned it in a few articles. I've mentioned it in a couple of interviews. General Wesley Clark, former NATO commander, four-star general, visited the Pentagon a couple of months after 9/11, and the generals there, or the admirals, whatever, they told him that America was planning to go to war with six or seven countries in the region, and Clark was a little bit taken aback, and he said, oh, have these countries threatened us? And the answer was, oh, no, we just want regime change. And the names of the countries were rattled off. The ones that America is at war with were among them. Syria was on the list. Iran is on the list. Sudan was on the list before it was balkanized north and south. I assume northern Sudan is still on the list. Somalia is on the list. I think that covers them, plus the ongoing wars. Libya, of course. And, this is the way the leaders of America think. you know, we'll take care of any country. It's got nothing to do with whether it's a democracy or a despotism or anything in between. It's just a matter of whether they're independent states or Western puppets. That's what it comes down to. If they do America's bidding and the West bidding, they get along well. I mean, the Saudis, the vile Saudis, close relationship with Washington. I mean, Assad in Syria looks saintly compared to the Saudis and the Bahrainis and the Qataris, and the Jordanians are no saints at all. Because Israel in a class
by itself.
Yes, but
the Saudis and the caliphs, I mean, they come to Paris and you see them in the boutiques, so they come to London and they pimp and preen and look at themselves in the mirrors. And they actually believe that they are the cream of society. Of course, in reality, they are both the scum and the dregs. But they are upheld in this position because by the British and the Americans, which is foolish, because you understand that there is a major democratic change coming in the Middle East, and there are going to be more pushing towards this. One of the subjects we might touch on, of course, is the effect of money printing, which is going to start really getting out of hand in Europe and in the USA. And when that happens, there will be a huge effect on food prices in the Middle East. And another great big wave of democratic reform will happen. So it's coming, and it's becoming, people don't realize it's becoming because of a failure of the Western economic system, which is going to push, in practice, push for democratic reform further in the Middle East. So all these things are coming soon. Nothing is going to stop them. And I believe that the USA and the UK are making an absolutely huge mistake. They should tie their flags to democracy and have, because everybody now knows that they're not. I mean, the USA and the UK don't seem to have heard of the internet. They may try and shut it down, of course, the internet. But everybody know that I know now. I was talking to a fellow in the street this morning, and if I may say so without being patronizing, a very ordinary man. And I asked him, he said to me, made some comments on world affairs, and it's quite surprised me. And I said, where did he got his information from? And he'd actually managed to get it from the newspapers. And I was absolutely astounded. I said, don't you have an internet? And he said, well, no. But his view that he had picked up somehow from our newspapers, you know, the mainstream newspapers in the UK, was one which fully understood the great changes that were happening in the world. He understood that the dollar at one point is going to collapse. He understood that China, Japan, Russia, and India are making agreements amongst themselves. He knew all this. Agreements amongst themselves to trade in their local currencies and not in the dollar. He understood that attempts to strangle Iran that it's going to be just thwarted by the Russians and the Chinese and the Indians and the rest of them. And he understood that the world is in a very dangerous situation. Now, this was an ordinary man, and I was absolutely gobsmacked, if I may use the phrase, because that's telling me now that ordinary people out there now are getting sort of, they're seeing behind the lies told them by television, by the lies told them by the mainstream newspapers. And they're actually picking up the sort of things, Stephen, that you do so well on your programs and on the broadcasting and articles that you do.
Rodney, if people, I condemn the Western media, and my favorite target is the New York Times. We have to take a break, but I'll squeeze this in very quickly. But if you read a New York Times article that goes into any kind of detail, you can go down to paragraph 12 or 15 or whatever, and you'll actually find some important truths in there. You know, those are the kind of truths that should be headlined. So they sprinkle a few truths in for people to go dig them out on their own. Most people don't, so they don't worry about it. And the rest of what they write is garbage. And I quoted Gore Vidal, who passed away on the 31st, on Monday. And he referred to a lovely quote. He's so many by him. He called the New York Times the Typhoid Mary of American journalism.
Oh, dear.
What a marvelous quote. Well, he had a whole bunch like that. We need to take a break. But it's amazing, with a small amount of effort, especially if anybody is connected online, they can find out what's going on. They can find out how it harms them directly. And why on earth should they sit back and take this when they can do something? They don't need to throw bombs. They just need to get active enough to protect themselves. Let's take a quick break, Rodney, and we'll come right back.
Yes.
Welcome back. I'm with Rodney Shakespeare, talking heavily about the Middle East. Rodney, let me just mention the article that I'll put out tomorrow. I drafted it this morning, and I call it Day of Infamy at General Assembly. For anybody who doesn't know, on Friday, the General Assembly passed a resolution condemning Syria, the victim, for the crimes of the perpetrators. The Western killer gangs, the death squads that are running around the country murdering people, they got off the hook, and Syria, the victim, is blamed. And I go over this in my article. 133 countries in the world, of the 193, I believe, or 93 and 94, voted for this. Only 12 countries voted against. They included Russia and China and Cuba and Venezuela and 8 others. They voted against. 31 countries abstained. That's an expression of cowardice.
What is it quite extraordinary is that none of these countries seem to realize is that Syria had a referendum. It had a referendum on what was basically a change to a form of democracy. In other words, if you are a democrat, you were actually getting what you wanted. And then they had actually had the election. But
Rodney, on a new constitution they had.
A new constitution, but then they had elections on it.
They had elections following that in May.
Yes.
I think around March they had the referendum. They let the Syrian people decide on this. They drafted the constitution. Syrians voted on it. There were some things people didn't like. They changed it. They amended the constitution. It may not be perfect, but I read the constitution and I wrote about it, and I'll say categorically, overall, it looked pretty decent to me.
Yes. And to me, but the point I'm making, Stephen, is that here is what you want if you are a Democrat. I mean, you actually managed to get the change. You got the change faster and quicker in Syria. You haven't yet really got it in, shall we say, Egypt, where the military who hold the effective power have taken certain posts like General Tantawi has made himself defense minister, despite the brutal use of power over Morsi. In a country like, Tunisia, I mean, there are so many questions, but you actually got the changes that you would normally expect and want in Syria. And yet all of this never forms part of Kofi Annan's statements on the matter. Kofi Annan seems to have forgotten that there was these changes. So it's quite disgraceful. We haven't got what was a considerable move towards democracy on any argument. The Americans and those wonderful Democrats, the Saudis and the Qataris, are trying to overthrow it. And on top of that, you've got the Turks, who are supposed to be democratic, also trying to overthrow it, that their minds have been poisoned by Zionism and the desire to smash up any country. Democracy, Stephen, never comes into it anymore.
That's exactly right, and I've said countless times that America, both domestically and abroad, Rodney, simply won't tolerate democracy. There's no democracy in America. We have sham elections. We have a one-party state with two wings. Gore Vidal defined it that way. He called it either the property party or the money party. That's what it is. Big money that runs America, big money runs the Western countries. I mean, that's what it's all about. You've got a power structure, and people in America live in a delusional state, thinking that Obama is different from Romney, and the people who fear Romney becoming president, they don't have a clue that Obama and Rodney and Romney are two sides of the same coin. And when on fundamental core issues, war and peace, corporate power, the big stuff, they are absolutely in lockstep. Maybe they have a different view on gay rights or stem cell research, other issues like that, birth control, whatever. They're not unimportant issues, but they don't rise to the level of the biggest ones. When it comes to millions of lives at stake, that's where the rubber meets the road. When it comes to corporations stealing us blind, that is very, very major stuff. And both of these guys are absolutely locked together on policies on that. And will there be more war in the Middle East? I think there will be, and it won't be any different whichever one of these guys becomes president. Actually, I prefer Romney over Obama, only for one reason.
Indeed. I mean, you know, indeed, they're both warmongers. Stephen, there's no need to be too depressed about one aspect of the USA situation, and it is this, is that there is a great big economics that's going on. Your middle classes have lost real earning power over the last 25 years. Your unemployment is roughly 20 to 22%. Your students are no longer going into higher education because you've got your trillion in student debt and all of that. You've got problem after problem. And I think that your government already knows that there's a great crash coming. And they're going to declare war on their own people. Now, the consequences will be a very rapid development of political opposition. It's going to be bad. It may be looking something like civil war is coming to the United States. I mean, after all, your Homeland Security Agency has bought 450 million dum-dum bullets and another 250 million on order. It's going to be bad, but at the same time, once the thing starts to crack, there is going to be a colossal change towards looking at new ideas. So the grip of the two parties, which is there in the USA, and it seems to be, the whole of American politics is essentially controlled by lobbying money and by the big corporations. It's controlled by the military-industrial complex. But some sort of crash, political crash, I think, is certain to come to the USA, though it's going to be accompanied by a sort of form of civil war, I suspect.
Roddy, these policies always guarantee bad endings. I've got to get this in so my listeners don't think I've gone daft. When I say I prefer Romney over Obama, it's only because Obama fools so many people. I mean, they're both the same. They're literally both the same, but Obama fools them. People hated George Bush. People will hate Romney after so many months in office. Give him so many months. Give him a year. They'll hate him. We need people to absolutely despise what's going on, what's coming out of Washington. And that's the spark that could really excite people to want to do something about it. Because people know deep down that the only way they're ever going to get any change is if they initiate it themselves. Well, you've got to get them mad at the people in power. If they think Obama is basically a good guy, you know, maybe he's led astray by people around him. Baloney. Baloney.
Yes.
He's an attack dog against human rights and civil liberties, against peace, etc.
I'm going to support you on your Romney remark, because people had better work out and learn this, that the moment Obama came into power with a Nobel Peace Prize, of course, a halo on his head, he was appointing members of the Trilateral Commission, Council for Foreign Relations. He was appointing all the Wall Street lobbyists. He was behoven to the military-industrial complex right from the beginning. And apart from mouthing on the words about let's have change, etc., and indeed embodying all the hopes of many millions of Americans, apart from that, there was nothing that I could see that would mean that Obama would be anything except more of the same, or even worse. And I was saying so right at the time, because you see, it was the people he put around him. That was the thing. Once you saw who those people were, there could be no hope of any change. So I say to people who are greatly disappointed by Obama, I do understand. I mean, it's a shocking situation, but they've got to face up to it. They were naive to think there would be a change. There will only be a big change when people in America get off their backsides and fight for new policy and new change. And to do that, they're going to have to be prepared to take on the whole intellectual structure, the whole political structure of what is in the USA. I think it's coming, Stephen. It's coming. When it comes into birth, the birth is going to be very, very rough indeed.
I think it's coming too. And a man that I had on another program that I hosted one time before he took ill, and he simply couldn't do anything, and he passed away, I think it was in November 2010. If I have my date right, I'm thinking of Chalmers Johnson. And he wrote he wrote a trilogy on this, and he basically said that all empires meet the same fate. The ones that choose the gun over peaceful policies and overspend and over this and overstretch was a word he used, they all come to the same bad ending. He mentioned Britain at the end of World War II, where they faced a choice.
Yes, Britain, Portugal, Spain. Have you now who is that wonderful man who has drawn the comparisons between the end of the Russian empire and he's American, and the collapse of the Soviet Union, and he's drawn the parallels between that and the situation in the USA. He calls it closing. It's Dmitry Orlov. Have you come across this man?
Oh, I know that name. I know that name, and it's possible that I mentioned him in one of my articles that, again, goes back several years, and I'd have to go back and see if I can find it. But I believe the man I'm thinking of said that America will break up into pieces.
Well, Dmitry Orlov, in area after area, starts with sort of generalizations, like both the USA and USSR are post World War II military industrial engines, and they're predicated on technological process and economic growth, and they try to spread their ideology over the entire planet. And it goes on and on and on, and he starts to draw the parallels, and then he deals with matters with, like, when the collapse comes, how the USSR is better equipped to survive the collapse. To take an example, people did not have the car. They were used to living on very little, and they had to make do and mend. And if they had a few square feet of land, they would grow cabbage in it. And then he then contrasts that with the practices and psychology of the USA, which, if it comes to some form of collapse, is very inadequately prepared. He saw that both of them got kicked out of Afghanistan. He see that both of them got out of control military budgets. Both of them got unsustainable deficits and foreign debt. Both of them have unresponsible, corrupt political systems. Both of them have delusions of grandeur. Dmitry Orlov, I commend to you. He draws these parallels. At the end of it, there's so many parallels, you go, I think he's onto something. But it's not good news. That's what he's saying. But I think he's a Russian, but he's probably a naturalized American. And he's got himself a boat now, I think, in which he hopes to avoid the trouble in some way. There you are. Dmitry Orlov, closing the collapse gap. Something like that is how you'd Google for him.
Well, I really believe that it's in the cards, and Chalmers Johnson predicted the demise of America. He said we can either choose empire, which is the way the country is going now, or we can choose a democratic country, which America never was in the first place, but that's another issue. But the way America is going now, Johnson said, it is absolutely heading for bankruptcy and collapse, and that's the road it's on. And it gets, I mean, he said these things before the 2007 economic crisis and the gross overspending on banker bailouts and militarism got ratcheted up more than ever. And he wrote three books on this. And now it's so much worse. And America is literally on the same path that destroyed the Soviet Union. And I just can't believe that people in America, people at high levels in America aren't smart enough to see this. But maybe they feel, Rodney, that, you know, I'm in government now, but when the trouble comes, I'll be out of government. It'll be somebody else's problem to deal with. And I'll take all the benefits that I got. And, you know, I'll hunker down and do whatever I'm going to do and let somebody else worry about this terrible mess that we left for them. Something
that's what they are thinking. But when the collapse comes, and in particular, I know that the currency collapses tend to be relative, but the dollar is falling for a fall, and because all the countries are quietly maneuvering against it, and when that happens, the people who think they're going to get out of it, well, they're going to start by losing their jobs. So they're smug and complacent, and they think they can avoid trouble. Trouble is for other people; it's never for them. But I suspect that they're going to get a shock. Unfortunately, in situations like this, countries tend to go to war to hide up the internal stresses, to give everybody a sense of purpose and a sense that they're fighting against something which is evil. But I don't think that America's going to avoid some nasty internal consequences. And your government is, of course, as we know, is preparing. I mean, all those 30,000 drones which would be flying around. I believe the other day, was it Obama who said that they won't be armed against the American people? I mean, you wonder,
really,
you know, tell me another one. Yes, I'm the Queen of Timbuktu, or I'm a Dutchman, whatever you say in America. Absolutely preposterous. Of course those things would be armed against the American people. And when are the American people going to stand up to object? There are 30,000 drones are actually by 2015, Stephen.
I wrote about it. I mean, they're talking about absolutely outrageous stuff. I mean, all these thousands of drones patrolling America, you know, supposedly just surveilling. The hell's just surveilling. They'll be armed. They'll be ready to attack anybody, any place.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing in many countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan. But they have these things flying all over the place. Somalia, they're attacking people. Yemen, they're attacking people. I imagine they could be attacking people in places we don't know about, and they certainly will be attacking any uprisings in America. There's no question about that.
The latest one where they're using them, I think it's Kenya, for that Coney man or something round there. Country after country now is that the drones are going in. And it's all part, of course, of a global fascist type government. One last thing, if we've just got time to talk about it, Stephen. The situation in Europe, where, frankly, it looks to me that disaster is coming there. The thing cannot hold together. You've got this smug, complacent political elite that thinks that the only thing which matters is to keep itself and its considerable financial benefits going. I mean, the sums which the elite are paid are absolutely astronomical. Could you make a quick comment on that then? What do you think is going to happen in Europe? And is it going to split up? Is it going to split up by them kicking out Greece and Spain? Or are the Germans going to pull the plug and they themselves pull out with one or two others?
I've said several times that Greece is a corpse. So it's only waiting for its obituary to be written, Rodney. Spain is breathing hard. It's on life support. I think both countries are going straight down the tube bankrupt. I think the euro was a currency absolutely heading for collapse and disaster from inception. exception. You simply cannot package 17 countries under the same system and have them surrender their monetary authority, basically their national sovereignty, a lot of their fiscal sovereignty. And this is what the euro system is. I call it a euro straitjacket. Europe is in serious trouble. I think the whole thing at some point is going to collapse. And the only thing that keeps it afloat is they keep flooding money into it. So, you know, I mean, it's like a leaky boat that keeps getting more leaky. So you just pile more Band-Aids on it. But, you know, you can keep your finger in the dike only so long until the whole damn dike falls apart. And I think the European dike is heading for entirely falling apart. When? Who knows?
Well, it won't be far off. I mean, the overall debt of the countries is now over 100% of GDP, and of course, once it goes over 100%, you've got things like Greece, which is now at 160 or 170%, and Italy at 120. Spain isn't actually so bad; it's around about 70-75%. But the point about Spain, of course, is that it's got this huge debts on housing and property debts. And have you actually looked at an image of Bankia, the headquarters of the bank, which has now just gone bankrupt? And the headquarters actually leans over to one side, and that is the metaphor for the whole of the Spanish economy. The whole thing is completely and utterly askew. The young people's unemployment in Spain now, these are government figures, is 54%. You know, you just can't make this up. And now what's going to happen, Stephen, is that they're going to be, the European Central Bank is going to end up making, with the Troika, with the IMF and the European Central Bank and the World Bank, they're going to make loans to the Spanish government, and that will mean even more stringency, even more austerity, because you see these loans are ultimately only concerned with bailing out a corrupt banking system. They're not concerned with creating jobs or the real economy. Now, when that happens, and it looks as though we're only a few days away from that, you may have 100% unemployment for young people. I mean, the situation is ludicrous. They are completely corrupt. These people are idiots. It's like the 1930s. No imagination, no understanding. They only think of themselves, and they think that what's good for themselves must be good for every other people. These people are monsters, Stephen, and I am fed up with it. One does one's best, but I'm afraid we're going to... If you look in the 1930s in America, I mean, you had the Pecora Commission, you had Glass-Steagall, you managed to get stuck in. But we in Europe now today, and we're doing absolutely nothing, we are walking into disaster.
So true, Rodney, absolutely true. And the sad thing is that ordinary people are the ones who are hurt most. You know, The big boys, they have lots of money. They have places they can run off to, a home here, or this there, any place. They can run off to Europe. They can run off to South America. They can do anything they want, and they just leave the wreckage behind, and that's what these people are. They're criminals. I mean, they're the worst kind of criminals imaginable. We're just about out of time. There's so much more I can say, but we have about a minute left. Let me give it to you, Rodney, for any final thought.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Stephen, for the very positive way you and your listeners are looking forward to new thinking in the world. It's going to be tough as we go through this period of birth, and it's going to be particularly tough in the USA. But new thinking is coming forward, and I think the USA, as long as it starts to actually address an interest-free money supply for the real economy and the spreading of the real economy. This is not money for Donald Trump. It's money for small businesses and for spreading ownership. If your listeners get hold of that, then they can go forward, and when the time is right, which is going to be very, very soon, we could indeed see the USA leading us with a new economics and a new politics.
It
so let's
happen.
Not give up hope yet.
Oh, I never give up hope, but I must say, I'll be 78 next month, and I grew up in a different country. It had all kinds of warts and problems and so on when I grew up, but it was so different than the situation today in America. The young people, literally, unless they come from a wealthy family, they have absolutely no future. I grew up in a very modest family, and I had a future. I absolutely had a future. I had nothing going for myself, but there were lots of opportunities, and other kids like myself who went to inner-city public schools also had a future, and today that future has been destroyed by the leaders that run America.
Yes, I'm afraid it has been destroyed.
I just decided in my senior years, there's only one way I want to spend them. I want to try to give back to younger people. It's all independent. It's all volunteer. Nobody tells me what to do or say. Nobody pays me 10 cents. And I can't imagine doing anything other than this. Rodney, it was a great program. I'll shoot you an email as soon as we get back off air. And I'll just remind my listeners that, of course, we're on every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends, Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit for programs like this with guests like Rodney Shakespeare.